Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm your host for the first hour, Tim Hayes. And today is Thursday, July 28th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. And if you have any of those you'd like to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number, if you'd like to talk to us, press 1 on your phone. It will put the icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on the microphone and introduce you by your area code. There's also a whole list of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process so that if you cannot make it to the live version of this show and call in for direct help, you can listen to those audio files and they can serve as a tutorial to help you get effective and powerful benefits from the use of these tools. And I think I can honestly say that probably most of those audio files of those shows where people have been stepped through the worksheets, I myself have listened to them numerous times and picked up hints and tips and it's everybody's different, everybody's take on what they need to incorporate or learn or see about themselves is different, and it's an infinitely expanding body of knowledge as we learn how are we creating our emotional state, how can we change it when it's something that we don't like, and how can we actively create, consciously create, something that's more in line with what we would prefer. And I continue to learn about that on a daily basis. And that's why we do this show and the support groups, to spread that learning and invite others to step into that learning space, that questioning space for themselves and others. Another way we do that is we provide support groups. And there's a support group happening tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. People attend that through Zoom. And all the information you would need, or that you'd need to pass along to somebody else so they could join us, is available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website. We've got a separate page for the information for logging in on Tuesday and a separate page for logging in on Thursday. So please feel free to join us or pass that information along to somebody you think might benefit from it. And join us for a support group. The last time we did a support group was Tuesday, and we had somebody work through a worksheet, and we had somebody else frame out three or four worksheets that they could do between group sessions or on their own. So it is, it's valuable enough work that it's motivated people like Michael and Jeannie Rice to donate their time to teaching it for a lot of years. I think Michael is approaching the 50-year mark of his own journey and maybe the 45-year mark of actually doing this work and teaching this without demanding any payment. They will accept donations gladly if you believe that these tools are helping and you want to spread the wealth that you have financially. And yet Michael has continually made the commitment to try and make these tools available to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, whether they have the financial resources to pay for them or not. So, if you're benefiting from the work, there's a donate button on the website at whyagain.org. And if you know somebody that might benefit from this work, please pass the information along, because I have never run into in all of my years of surfing the net and going to seminars and trainings, I've never run into a body of work that is more powerful than this, whether you're paying thousands of dollars for it or $10 for it or it's free. This body of work is worth lots and lots of money, and yet it's being offered without requirement for payment. So please feel free to check it out, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And let us know how it's landing for you, how it's working for you. You can also email if you're not available to call in the show live. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeanie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And what we've been doing here on this show, in this first hour of the show since January 10th, is reading slowly, carefully, trying to wring as much good stuff out of it as we can, reading The Way of Mastery. And yesterday we dipped our toe into Lesson 17, which follows on the heels of Lesson 16 and follows in that pattern, to my way of thinking about it, of presenting a model of thought like a parable, like a metaphor, like a myth, something that can contain a truth, a storyline that can contain multiple levels of truth that are just too complex to fit within a simple literal statement or story or image. And so we began reading in Lesson 16 about how spirit, pure spirit, consciousness existed before there was anything physical. And Lesson 16 laid out a kind of a story or a map or a parable for how creation moved from just pure thought all the way to the birth of an individual soul, or the thoughts about an individual soul being separate from the original energy of thought, of mind, of consciousness, all the way through the creation of all matter into the emotions that, or prior to matter, having emotions and images and kind of mathematical concepts about space, to the birth of the physical universe. And now Lesson 7 says, okay, we're not just going to talk about mind and consciousness and soul and the birth of egoic consciousness. We're going to talk about the journey of the soul. And we read the first few pages, and we left off with, right before starting the section, talks about coming into body. It's talking about having a consciousness without a body in the first few pages. What would it be like to be in pure spirit, in pure consciousness, and having other images, other impressions, other experiences of other individual sparks of the divine light of consciousness, some of them actually in a physical body and many of them not in a physical body. And then you as an individual spark of consciousness, you make a decision that's not forced on you by anyone whatsoever. You make a decision to start focusing all of your attention on the tiny bit of physical matter called a sperm and an egg, and bring your consciousness and your creative energy force to bear in that one minute focus and begin to withdraw your conscious awareness from this greater energy system, soul, spark of light that you are, that's connected to everything. And so the section of the lesson is titled Coming into Body. And the text reads, as you begin to descend, which means to bring your attention or to slow your vibration of consciousness down so that you begin to incarnate, you did not so much go anywhere as merely, shall we say, turn your thermostat down so that the quality of your consciousness, your essence, your soul, began to vibrate at a frequency that resonated with the third dimensional plane. Your attention, your focus, your desire began to be more and more focused on one unique, particular set of circumstances. The circumstances are the web of relationship created by the parents, and created by the cultural milieu in which they live. That quality of consciousness, that field of energy, is like a spinning vortex within a larger spinning vortex that we call the world. From your place of perception in pure spirit as you begin to descend, the world is not solid at all. It's just another dimension of vibration with its own peculiar parameters. So you, as soul, you as individuated consciousness, begin to descend into physical incarnation. This cannot occur before the moment of conception in your mother's womb. Usually it is at that point of conception when you, as a soul, become involved in the very act by which conception occurs. And a new form of life begins to develop within the womb. In that moment, there is a flash. You might think of what you call a quantum leap. And your attention becomes almost entirely fixated on, identified with, that particular quality of energy that is that new birthing of a physical form. You have, quote, come into body, close quotes. Coming into body simply means that you have fixated your attention away from all other dimensions and have taken on, so to speak, the unique, particular, and sometimes very peculiar parameters involved in this particular form, physical form. What is that physical form made of? Is it made of inert matter? Hardly. That physical form is itself a web of relationships created by the particular vibrational patterns of the mother and the father. Therefore, as you come into this world, the very first relationships that you have are with the mother and the father. And you know and you feel them intimately. For you are now identified with a growing physical form that is itself growing out of, like a wave coming out of a particular ocean, growing out of the matrix of energies that make up the mother and the father. Here is also where your, quote, struggle, close quotes, begins. Your struggle to create yourself in the world. Your struggle begins to find yourself. What are you going to be? What will you be? How will you develop? For the majority of you, the process whereby attention is shifted from a different state of consciousness into the physical dimension, this flash, this quantum leap, this shifting of attention was so dramatic, and it required such a shock that you began to forget your connection to spirit. You began to forget your realization that you are soul, that you are pure consciousness. You began to lose awareness of your infinite freedom. You could call it becoming unconscious or falling asleep. So, several times as I was reading that, I thought, so here on this planet, at least on this continent in the United States, there's this big debate going about when does human life start and can we have an abortion and can we not have an abortion. And so I want to come back and just repeat with a little bit stronger emphasis what I was already talking about. This is a parable. It's a story. It's a metaphor. It's a way to start to talk about and point towards that which cannot be contained in words. And far more important than tying it into any kind of thoughts about a political or legal debate is the consciousness, is the awareness of your infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment and thereby create your experience of life in each new present moment. So it just felt like it was important to do that. Maybe for me, maybe for other people, maybe not at all important. But the next section is titled Imprinting in the Womb. And so, you know, before we even get into that section, it just comes to me to talk about, as we've talked about a lot through these first 16 chapters or lessons in the book, the creative force that is your mind energy, that you as an individual human being have control over. You have no control over whether or not that creative force is there or is on. It's always there. It's always on. Your thoughts are always creating. Mike Dooley signs his emails with, "Thoughts become things, so choose the good ones." That force of your mind energy, as Michael Rice calls it, that force of your thoughts is always on and is always creating. The only thing you have any influence on is where you point it. Do you point it towards thoughts of lack and pain and judgment, or do you point it towards thoughts of allowance, appreciation, gratitude, acceptance, surrender? Where you point your thoughts, you create more of whatever you're pointing your thoughts towards. So here we are, lesson 17 in the section titled Imprinting in the Womb. The very first universe that you experience within the physical dimension is the experience or the universe of the womb. Here, you are in constant, and they repeat the word, constant communication with all that is passing through the energy field of the mother. This does not mean just the pot pie she had for dinner or the cup of coffee that she had in the morning that made her heart race. It is also the quality of air that she breathes. It's every thought and emotion that goes through her. More important than all of this is the quality of emotional energy that makes up the particular matrix that she is experiencing in her own universe. For these things immediately affect the hormonal balances, the flow of chemicals through the physiological system, and at this point, you are very much a part of that physiological system. Therefore, you take on, you begin to feel and experience the psychic field of the mother. You are also aware of the psychic field of the father and any other immediate family members. So what does it mean, hormonal balances? What does it mean, you know, physicality and blood? It's all, as I said earlier in this previous section, it's just a vortex of energy. It's a nested field of energy within a nested field of energy within a nested field of energy. Michael Rice likes to talk about the chemistry of emotions and the endorphins and the neuropeptides and things. Frequently when he does that, he'll back up and he'll say, it's so-called chemistry, but we've already started with the observation that there is no such thing as matter. It's just energy that's been so lowered in its vibration or movement to be perceptible to the senses. Well, that knowledge of that science is contained in this work, and we read about it in the previous section. We slow our vibration down so that we can focus on the physical to become part of the growing body in the mother's womb. So in a very real way, all we're talking about is energy vibration patterns. We're not talking about hormones. We're not talking about physiology. We're talking about energy fields within energy fields within energy fields. And I have for decades now worked with mothers to wake up to this, to understand that if they become pregnant, all that's going on in their field of thought and emotion is impacting their child. They are inseparable. Not just because the mother's bloodstream flows through the child and through the umbilical cord. They share the same bloodstream. And therefore, the neuropeptides that communicate the presence of certain emotional states to the mother are also communicating that to the child. And of course, the child has no language, no knowledge of this process, no sense of individuation from the mother at that point. The soul might have an awareness of individuation, or that experience of individuation, or that experience of deep connection at a higher level. But the mind, the brain of the child has none of that. And yet the brain of the child will carry memories of what's gone on in and around its environment as it was growing within the womb of the mother. So you pick up the energies that flow through your mother. You pick up the energies of the thoughts and the emotions. You pick up the energies of physiological changes. Pick up the psychic field of the mother that is the environment, the universe in which you are now growing. And you're also aware of the psychic field of the father and any other immediate family members. The text goes on and says, you're also aware of the energies, any particular dominant energies that are going on within the social structure. So if you're born into a country that has a war going on, Diedrich Wolzak talks about being born into a prison of war camp in, I don't know, what it was, the Philippines or the Azores. He was on a little island that was, you know, under war, and one group had a concentration camp, a prisoner camp. And he was born into that and grew up into it for his first 3 years of life. All of that's affecting him. He is a brilliant mind, tremendous physical capability. He and his brother had great success as international athletes. He had the intelligence to fight through all of that trauma and become quite successful in business, and yet he was so depressed, he was so tortured mentally, that in his 50s he was planning to end his life. That's because of all of those energies, all of that imprinting, all of that trauma, some of which happened before he was even out of his mother's womb, because his mother was in a prisoner camp, prisoner of war camp. So he had an impact. He had a level of awareness about those fields of energy in the social structure around him, as well as his father and the energy field of his mother. The text goes on and says, many have used the word imprint to describe this initial state in which you become identified with the psychological form that is emerging out of the field of energy that is the particular matrix or the mixture of energies of the mother and the father and the social environment. This is where you start. Again, you've done so in order to bring forth certain lessons. You have done this because of certain patterns held within the consciousness before you turned your attention to the physical dimension. For the vast majority of you reading this lesson, that dissension, that quantum leap from the realm of pure spirit into a different vibrational state, into its vibrational state of the third dimensional field, was a shock, so much so that your awareness forgot yourself as pure spirit. Now, if the shock at conception is not sufficient, it could happen at any time during being in the womb. If there is any kind of trauma for the mother, if there is a physiological imbalance, if the breathing experience is difficult, if there is any problem with the flow of nutrients to the body, if the mother is under even occasional acute emotional stress, then you will make an attempt to pull back from the body as spirit, pure energy, as pure soul. You will make an attempt to pull your awareness away from the body in an attempt to rediscover the realm of spirit. When you do this, the body of the fetus goes numb. That is, life force is withdrawn from it. You, your consciousness, your soul, your spark of divine mind is that life force. That's that creative energy we're talking about. If I want to develop a body, if I want to be here, if I want to come back and learn lessons, the focus of my mind energy, the creative energy, is on the fetus in the womb, and it's creating that flow of energy which will move into the manifestation of a full human child. And yet, if there's enough trauma, physically, mentally, or emotionally in my mother, I might withdraw my, you know, hey, conductor, stop the train. I want to get off. And I withdraw my attention from the process, and the creative life force is withheld. There's a kink in the hose. And when you do this, the body of the fetus goes numb. That is, the life force is withdrawn from it. And as it grows, the nervous system adapts to the level of life force that is flowing through it. And that is what comes from you and not from another. The life force that flows into this level of vibration that we call physicality, the physical world, the third dimensional physical world, comes from you, the spark of divine mind, the soul. And if you say, I don't want to go there, I don't want to go through this, I don't want to be in my mother, she's too scared, she's too angry, she's too hurt, then there's a disruption in the physiological energy system of the developing fetus. So the text goes on and says, so that during this period of 9 months, you are in a particular universe where you are having physical experience, it's not unlike one who is 60 years old in the physical dimension. So even though your conscious focus of awareness is on this group of cells that is growing and developing into a fetus, you're having a physical experience, even though you're predominantly still just in the spirit, in the experience of mind and consciousness. And yet the physical experience you're having is very similar to one who's 60 years old in the physical dimension. That person who is 60 years old in the physical dimension is not just the body, they are a separate spirit, soul, spark of the divine mind. So the text says, you are experiencing the sensory realm of third dimensionality, and you are already being deeply influenced by psychic patterns that are not your own. So again, think of this as a koan. How could this be? How could I even be as consciousness and aware of myself and others if I have no body, if I have no brain? It doesn't seem to make any sense based on how we've been taught and the way we live our lives, as though the physical is all there is. Please notice as we continue to read what reactions you're having physically, mentally, and emotionally. Oh, wow, this is exciting. Oh, wow, this is a bunch of bunk. Oh, my, I'm feeling very tense or nervous or anxious. Oh, wow, I'm just spacing out and I don't even think I remember the last few paragraphs that were read. Just notice what's going on in you as you listen. The next section is titled, The Journey of Awakening Begins. The text reads, therefore, the journey of awakening requires, from the moment of birth on, the development of certain motor skills, certain verbal skills, and certain social skills, so that hopefully, if you are very lucky, by the time you're about 20 or 21 years of age, you are ready to start finding out who you are. It is very, very rare for an individual, especially in your cultural time frame, to emerge at the age of 10 or 12 or 14 or 17 with a deep sense of themselves apart from their parents, apart from the family, or apart from the culture. Think about that. Most of the people who are going to be listening to a reading like this in the way of mastery are going to be some of these people. And yet, the vast majority of people that are born are not tuning into things like this. They're not pulling away and getting a separate sense of their identity at 10, 12, 14, or 17 years of age. The text goes on and says, you think you are yourself, but you are really a bundle of reactivity. You are seeking to find approval, seeking to find safety, seeking to find survival and friendship in the world. That is, you are already caught up in the perception that what you experience is coming to you from the outside, and that you must therefore seek to adapt yourself to it. You are not yet alive. That means is, until you awaken to the truth, to the observation, to the lived realization that you are the one creating your experience of life, you are not yet alive. The text goes on and says, if you are very fortunate, during the time frame of the 20s, you merely experience greater degrees of freedom, greater degrees of making your own decisions, and experiencing the outcomes. This can be a very turbulent time. Still, you will believe that you know yourself, and yet you've not even begun to know yourself. Again, this is for the majority. As you go into your 30s, there is an opportunity now. Spirit begins to speak to you. Situations begin to emerge that require of you deeper understanding. If you're very fortunate, you will have begun to realize the great influence that the parents have had. Usually this is a stage of rebellion. Internally, you will begin to individuate more and more. The spiritual search often begins in the 30s in earnest. You may have been aware of that earlier in the 20s. Again, this is not a hard and fast rule, but generally by the 30s, it's time to truly begin to answer the yearning of the soul. Now, if the egoic consciousness has been fundamentally successful, that is, if you have found a way to create your survival, then you have developed the personalities that allow you to interact with the insanity of the third-dimensional human realm. Notice there is a clear awareness. The way most of us as humans are living our lives is insane. It is violent. It is as though the world is happening to us. It is as though we are separate from the world. It is as though we are separate and above nature rather than part of nature. It's insane. It's not the actuality of life. Most people are living in the illusion, the hallucination of their sense of permanence or security, which doesn't exist. They're living in the hallucination that people and things outside of them are making them angry or hurting their feelings or making them sad or scared, and that's never happened. But for me, it's very important that this work understands that if we were lucky, if the egoic consciousness has been fundamentally successful, which means that we have found a way to create our survival in the world, we've managed to get a job that can pay or support us, housing, food, clothes, education, whatever, and we've developed a personality that lets us interact with the rest of the world. This work understands that world, that third-dimensional human realm, is insane. It is violent. It is judgmental. It is based on hallucination and illusion. It's based on valuing things above people. It is based on viewing yourself as separate from everyone rather than connected to them. If you've been lucky, you've developed a personality that will allow you to interact with the insanity of the third-dimensional human realm. The text goes on and says, if you have had no major calamities or traumas, and if you have had no major failures, then you might continue on into your 40s with the smugness of thinking that you've got it all together. You may have found ways to avoid the fundamental gnawing question. What's that? The question is, what is my purpose? Why have I really come to the planet? I am more than just this. I am pure soul. I am pure spirit. I know there is more to it than this. If you have been able to successfully keep yourself distracted, that question may not yet have fully arisen. The egoic consciousness is merely that part of the body-mind that is responsible for keeping you physically alive. That's the only purpose of egoic consciousness. It is fueled by the desire for survival, the desire for safety. It wishes to create a certain set of order around you because through order, it can anticipate what will be required to keep the physiological organism functioning. Now what occurs is that somewhere along the line, usually very early in life, you begin to identify with this egoic mind and include your psychic state, your mental perceptions. The ideas you begin to learn about the world begin to be enfolded into the physiological individual, which is really the home of the ego. The body is the home of the ego. The body-mind, including the brain structure and the higher dimensions of functionality of the body, which is all the brain is, it's just a higher level of organizational principles and characteristics. And what is it to do? Just to help the body function. So a further step of forgetting who you are occurs when you begin to sense yourself as identified with the particular perceptions, the particular belief structures that are floating around in the higher mind of the body itself. You have forgotten the soul. You have forgotten spirit with a capital S. You have become identified as an American, as an Afro-American, as a Caucasian, as a boy, as a girl, as a fan of some sports team, as a lover of ice cream. You have identified with the thought patterns and belief systems, and you have forgotten your true nature as spirit and soul. The text goes on and says, you begin to take on and create what are called principles, never realizing that the principles are merely the product or the outcome of your social learning from the time you were in the womb and from the time that you were conditioned by the schooling of your culture. Many of you have gone so far as to believe that you are an Alabaman or a Washingtonian or a Californian because someone has told you that that is where you live. And though you've never found a boundary upon the face of the earth that says, here's California and here's Nevada, you have found a sign that someone has created and you have read it and believed it. And you have created an identification with one small aspect of life. Many of you are only now emerging to sense yourself as a global citizen, something that transcends being an American or a Canadian or a South African or a Russian. So you begin to sense this process whereby you keep making yourself smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, taking on psychic patterns from the parents, from the peers, and from the society around you. Spiritual path begins when, for some reason, something begins to whisper to you, quote, this is not who you are. This is not why you have come. You have come to heal your sense of separation from all of creation. You have come to realize the capital T truth, close quotes. Egoic consciousness then begins with the shock at the moment of conception that brings your attention to be completely fixated upon and as the physiological form beginning to emerge from a certain web of relationship. This begins to color your vision and to color your understanding. It gives you your unique individuality in the world. As you grow, as you emerge, as you move through certain experiences, you become colored by what you have had to do to survive. You become colored by the psychic imprints of those around you. You think you're thinking your own thoughts, when what is often the case is that you are merely parroting all that has come into your computer bank, into the brain, what Michael Rice would call the carbon-based memory, into the body. And the recording mechanism for that in the body is every cell in the body, specifically even more concentrated in the brain. Like a hard drive, it can only record what's put into it and then at a later date when it's called for, spit it back out. And that becomes confused in us with the freedom of the mind, the freedom of the spark of life that we call the soul, or the one mind, or consciousness. And we begin to believe that these thoughts that we have that have been programmed into us by the world and by our culture and by our family is who we are. And it is really us thinking them, when for the most part, as we're saying here, we're just parroting what's already been programmed into us. So the text goes on and says, now, it is quite true that this all began because there was a resonance between the web of relationships of the parents and of the society, and where your unique quality of consciousness was prior to the birth. In this sense, karma can be said to exist. Karma simply means action, the effect of, so that when you drop a pebble in the pond, you create a certain ripple. As long as you continue that ripple by dropping the same pebble in the pond, you get the same results. And part of those results is the need to be identified with only this vibrational field of energy called physicality. Until you decide to change the momentum of the ripples that you are choosing and that you are creating in the depths of the mind, until that happens, you cannot begin to ascend from the third dimension. The desire to do so is always within you. That is, it may be dormant. However, the desire to know the Creator must necessarily be within each soul, since the Creator is your actuality, is your reality. You have fallen asleep, and at some point, there comes the urge to awaken. When it comes, it's unmistakable. No denying it. The fireworks may not occur, but a shift happens within your being, and you know that you can never return to the way it was. You can never again pretend that life is only what you see through your senses. And once that happens, your soul begins to speak, and that's the title of the next section. And we'll move on with that a little bit more tomorrow. So again, it's just a way to start to conceptualize, to bring the focus of your conscious awareness to the things you might experience a little less directly, a little less intensely than the way you experience the input of your senses. And yet, they are very real. They are very much available for your experience. They are very much things that are pulling your attention, your creative energy in a certain direction. Just because it's a little softer, it's not as dramatic as somebody screaming in your face. It's not as obvious as the physical objects in your environment, doesn't mean it's not real. Deeply real. Deeply impactful for you. There are so many levels and layers of existence to be experienced and expressed and grown into. And this set of stories and images and parables and metaphors that we're reading in Lesson 16 and Lesson 17 are just that. just a pointing toward the fact that there's a lot more going on here than your physical senses can tell you about. Capacities to grow and expand into them beyond what your physical senses can do for you, can show you or help you experience. So, as we're taking a rest here between segments in Lesson 17, it's important to remember that there were exercises that have been given from the first lesson on that are about ways for us to practice stepping into an experience that is not so completely driven by the thoughts that we've been programmed with our culture and our families, and by the input of our physical senses, that we can take the time to do a meditation. We can take the time to watch the flow of thoughts without, to watch the movement of our thoughts without being moved by those thoughts, as Guy Finley would say. And yet, it will not happen unless we choose to let it happen, or we choose to assist it in happening by shifting the focus of our conscious awareness to those energies which are more subtle. It's as though we can exercise and strengthen a muscle or some brain power or a capacity to slow down, to soften, to live in the question, to extend our senses physically, to ask what might be around the periphery of our vision, what might be around, you know, around the edges of our perception physically. And we can actively ask to be shown. We don't even need to understand who, what, or where the help would come from. Who we're asking for help, what we're asking for help, where we're getting the help. It's an expansion of our ability to perceive that goes beyond the awareness of the physical senses. And what this book and so many others in spiritual traditions are calling us to is that that is available to anyone who asks for it and practices shifting the focus of their attention just a little bit off of the immediate, the solid, the loud, the intrusive input from the senses. To go into a meditation, to be present moment aware as you walk, whether you're walking in an office building each and every step, or whether you're walking in a forest, or you're walking on a mountainside, to be present moment aware and ask, what more is there for me to learn? What more is there for me to experience? How can I be taught by this moment? And as we do that, we open ourselves to a level of perception that goes beyond the five physical senses that we call physical senses. So I thank you all for being here and listening. We'll continue again tomorrow. There's a support group tonight. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is, what is today? Today is Thursday, July the 28th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Michael's going to be just a moment getting on. We're actually, We have gotten so many tomatoes out of our garden that we have a lasagna cooking. We're canning tomatoes and sauce. And so anyway, he's peeling the last little bit of tomatoes, so he asked me to talk until he could get back on. And so I'll just direct you first to our website, whyagain.org. If you click on schedules, you'll see several things, and one is the Global Book Club, and that's actually going to be taking place this afternoon. Those are the second, well, she has a lot of meetings. I think she does like six a week, but Michael is only on the second and the fourth Thursday at 3:30 Eastern time, which is 8:30 London time, and that's where the book club is based out of. And if you go to, if you click on schedules and click on Global Book Club, you'll find the link to join the Zoom meeting at 3:30 Eastern time today. And then if you scroll down, you'll also see all of the recordings from past book clubs. So you can click on those and watch and listen. A lot of those, Michael has actually walked somebody through doing a worksheet. And then they started going through a couple weeks ago, chapters 1, 2, and 3, and then the last meeting that he was at was 4, 5, and 6. So they're going a few chapters at a time and covering the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can download the book for free on the website. If you go to whyagain.org, one of the big blocks in the middle of the page says Why Again Book, free in 8 languages. And if you click on that, then it will take you to where you can download the book in English. Let's see, what else? It's in Dutch, English, Farsi, French, German, Russian, Spanish, and a little bit of it's in Thai. And so those you can just download and read right there on your computer. Also on that same link are the first two chapters of the second book that Michael was writing, The End of Suffering. And you can click on the audios and listen to the first two chapters. So all of that is under the little book icon. Now, also under schedule, you can find the information for the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing monthly membership. We do that the second Saturday of each month, followed by the next Tuesday as a follow-up support meeting. And so that information is under the schedule and Mind Shifters and Still Point. These are also under, if you scroll down on the homepage, under events. I try to put things in a couple different places so that as you're going through the website that it will pop up. It'll be easier for you to find. Under schedule and events both, you could find the 3-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop that Michael did for a marriage group. So that's out there. You can watch that for free. So that's the newest Why Is This Happening to Me Again live. And then, of course, we have the Codependence Communication Self-Study Intensive, and that's 90 hours. And you do that on your own, at your own pace. And then, of course, the radio show is here to support you if you have questions about any of it. So please go to the website and check all that out. Also, the app, if you haven't downloaded the most recent version, you can download that. And, you know, several people have been asking about the next intensive online, and Michael's considering either the Laws of Living or Teacher's Training, depending on which one he gets the most requests for. And that'll probably be sometime this fall. Michael and I actually have a week scheduled in August, so coming up here in just about 3 weeks, and we're going to the beach. We'll still be on here doing the radio show and anything else that's already pre-scheduled for that week, like the book club or anything else. We'll be doing that still, but we're going to be taking some downtime just to put our feet in the sand and just to breathe and relax. And so we're looking forward to that. I'm contemplating doing a Women Healing Women, but that would probably fall sometime in the spring. And so if you're interested in that, I've got a list of some names of women who have said that they would be interested in doing that intensive. So let me know, and also if you have any questions or if you find something on the website or app that you think could operate better in another way, drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know, and I'll see about fixing it or answering your question or whatever. So, Michael still isn't with us. We'll give him a few more minutes to finish that task downstairs. So we've got a few people on the switchboard, and it's quiet in the chat room. If you have a question, please press 1, and let us hear your voice. And besides all that, I don't know how many people might know or not know that I do one-on-one sessions. There is a fee to that, but you can go to, if you're on the website, up at the top, you'll see About Michael, About Jeannie, and Contact Us. You can click the About Jeannie, and it will take you down, and you can read my bio and my purpose statement and all of that, and then it gives you a link if you're interested in doing a one-on-one session. And so that's, you know, you click and pay for the hour, and then we will email back and forth and find a time that is convenient for both of us, and then we will meet and process whatever is up for you at the moment. So that is also out there. And no hands up, no questions. Anything going on for anybody out there that you would like some help with or that you would just like to make a comment about? We hope that things are going well for everyone. I know some areas it's like super hot, and I hope that everybody in those areas stays cool and safe from the fires. It's been kind of humid here, but not excessively hot. And we have definitely gotten rain for the last few days, so we're blessed with that. So, you know, garden's producing very well. We've, like I said, we've got so many tomatoes, we can't eat them all. And got zucchinis. There was actually a joke on Facebook. If you lived in this area, be sure to keep your doors locked and your windows up, or you're liable to get free zucchini, because it's just abundant for everybody right now, and so everybody's giving it away. But we are absolutely blessed. So what do you have a question about? Is there anything that we can help you with? And also, let me just throw out there, too, there's a link on the Why Again website that will take you to my website, which is Healing the Whole Woman. And it has a few different things out there than what is on the main website. So you might click out there and scroll around, and it describes what work I do with women. It talks about what a 4-day event looks like, what an 8 or 9 day event looks like. And also, if, you know, when we do teachers training, the prerequisite is that somebody has done the Why Is This Happening to Me Again. So that's normally a 9-day intensive when we're doing it live. And of course, we're adjusting the times when we're doing these online so that we meet like for 3 hours on Sunday and then a couple of hours on either Tuesday or Wednesday. So 5 hours a week. And so it's spread out over about a 14-week period to be able to get all the material in that we would normally get into a live 9-day if we were doing a residential at Heartland. And, of course, we're not opening Heartland this year again because of COVID. But I see Susan's hand is up, so I'm going to turn on her microphone. Hello, young lady.
Hey.
How's things going?
Nice to hear you talk. What'd you say?
I said, how are things going for you?
Oh, well, that's a big question. We just saw Jacob off to a rehab facility in California. He's been there before. He is extremely angry with us it's like he can't even see us. We have just given him everything and loved him and stayed calm, kept an active, present love even when he's attacking us, and he can't see it. And he is texting me these absolutely hateful texts. And now I'm in the basement. I've been in the basement cleaning up because he really cannot live with us anymore if he's like this. He doesn't know he needs help. He keeps saying, you're depressed and you need to go into treatment. I mean, and all you care about is money. And he's basically telling us what he cares about and what he thinks. But it's all projected onto us. And I did text Dr. Tim, who asked how I was doing. I won't read my text because it really says too much about my own feeling about what kind of diagnoses, at least what kind of psychological problems Jacob seems to be having right at the moment. But Tim wrote and said, I am practicing the gentle art of blessing for all of you. And he said, imagine the stress experienced as abuse that Jake was exposed to, which would be needed to take him from an innocent infant to the raging adult you see today. This can open the door to compassion and serve as a starting point for blessings. Well, I made the mistake of telling Dr. Tim that I would like to wring Jacob's neck. But what I failed to say was, it wasn't Jacob's neck I wanted to wring, because Jacob is not here. This is the most amazing phenomenon. Jacob is a beautiful soul. Jacob isn't here. He is like the incarnation of rage and hatred, all projected outward. My son came over and tried to talk to him. We had to have the police to the house twice. We had him told he couldn't come to our house. And so he was sleeping in his car one night, and he went to a hospital for an evaluation, and he sweet-talked them, and they released him because they thought he was fine. And they said to me, we see no reason why he needs treatment. He seems fine to us. And I said, he's very smart. And so it's my word against him. And he said, well, I have to let him out. So he appeared at almost midnight two nights ago, banged on our door. Tim went down. He said, I forgot my pillow. Well, Tim let him in. He got his pillow. He left. He slept in front of our house in his car. The next morning he came and nearly knocked the door down because he says he wanted his toothbrush. And we had called the police the night before, and that's why he was in the hospital. In the morning, I called the police again because it looked as if it had gotten even worse. And they told him to leave. They gave him a talking to, and the police were fabulous, Jeannie. We had two cops who were trained in mental health and addiction come to the door. Two other cops.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was, and two other cops who work with physical danger and so forth. And I said, we are not, as far as I can tell, in physical danger, but we are, you know, just so stressed with this situation and don't know what to do with this fellow. And he's very entitled. He says things like, all you think about is money. All I want is to get you to pay for my school. That's what grandparents are supposed to do, and to pay for my apartment. And you should be taking care of me until I'm able to take care of myself. And I may never be able to take care of myself because I'm an artist and I'm on the autism spectrum and I have this and I have that. So there are lots of excuses about why he wants us to take care of us. But then he says we are abusive to him and hateful. It's hard to hear, even though I know it's not Jacob speaking and it isn't me. He said nasty, ugly things on the internet too, which is just lovely. But in any case, we had to let him sleep here last night, and my son's very angry with us for, he had a, I don't know the rule, but he wasn't allowed to come here. But I wanted him to be on that Uber ride. We even hired an Uber to take him to the airport because he's so abusive. We didn't want to drive him. And you're getting an earful, and thanks for listening. But
that's fine.
We wanted him here so that we could make sure he got on that Uber ride. The only way to do it was to say, okay, you can sleep downstairs where, you know, in the, we have a basement sort of space. It's dark, but it's nice, sort of symbolically dark. He slept all night. Well, he didn't sleep, but he stayed quiet. I slept at my son's because I was afraid he might come upstairs and just make a ruckus in the middle of the night, and I put Tim on the task. Tim slept all night. There was no incident. We saw him off. He said, the only reason I'm going into rehab is because otherwise I'll be homeless and you won't pay for my college and you won't pay for my apartment. And I said, whatever it takes, Jake, just go there and do the best you can. And he took that as a sarcastic remark. I can see how he could. But so that's the situation. When he left, Jeannie, this is the thing I don't understand. When he left, the energy totally changed in the house and I felt okay. When he was here, I was like treading water, doing the best I could, keeping calm, holding a loving space, doing all I could, but I felt sick. And I know it's because I'm probably still not clear about my own issues or something, and I don't even know what to think of this, but this is the most amazing experience we've had with him yet. And what we're planning to do now is to have him fly directly to Pittsburgh when he gets out, right where he goes to college. We're going to drive a U-Haul full of his furniture, everything in the basement, and it's a mess down there, and meet him there and put the stuff in his apartment. And I've told him, that'll be your headquarters. You're going to live here now, and you'll be free from us, because I know you've been, you know, you don't think we're very good people, and we really don't want to feel your anger, and we also feel used, and this isn't good. I think you need to be free now. So that's the situation, and thank you very much for listening to all that. But I did love what Dr.
I think that's a really good plan, and it makes total sense that you would feel the relief. I mean, you have been under such a strain just trying to avoid conflict with him. And I totally understand. I mean, it's a different situation, but I know when I was 16 to 19 years old and I lived like that in constant fear, walking on eggshells with my husband.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it's, you know, when you finally, and it does take a while, because the first year that I divorced and was living on my own, I moved like 10 times in 1 year. And
wow,
it was all in my head. I mean, he wasn't, you know, stalking me or doing anything like that, but it was just a fear, I guess, that he was going to find me.
Yeah.
And
right,
I wasn't safe, and just continually moving, trying to stay ahead of it, not realizing it was inside of me and I was taking it with me. But
right,
there's definitely an energy shift when that whoever it is that is the trigger, the feelings that you feel and feelings I feel, they're inside of us, but they are triggered by outside. And that doesn't mean that we have to keep ourselves in a situation of abuse until we heal that issue in ourselves, you know?
I get it. There's no way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, removing him, what is a very smart thing to do, and getting your safe space back where you can breathe and relax. And, you know, you don't deserve that anger and abuse coming at you. And so I think you've made some really smart moves, and just breathe you know, whatever anybody else, whether it's your son or your daughter or whoever, you know, that may be in their upset, that's theirs. It's not yours.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know that's true. It is amazing to me how Jacob could choose the very thing that is my Achilles heel. I have a few things that I'm sensitive about, and he chose them and went after me. And then with Tim, he said, all you care about is money. Well, all Jacob cares about is money, but you know, to accuse Tim, who has worried about money and provided us very well for us, partly because he's been anxious about it, and I was proud of Tim because he just took a deep breath and said, I'm sorry you think that about me, or something like that. He was perfect. He didn't attack back or defend or do anything. But it is amazing how he picks them. He's very smart.
Yeah,
and,
well, total resonance. I mean, you know.
Yeah. we also had a man who'd been homeless and living out of his car, a guitarist, come over. That's a long story, but he came to visit, and Jacob was sweet, sang for him, sang Panis Angelicus, like an angel himself. Played the guitar, sang a song he had written. They got the best possible impression. But when they left, the other guy showed up again. So there is a will in there, which is fascinating to me, that can choose how they're going to present themselves. They have some control, but I can't ask them to have some control. What I get to see is what they want to hand out, you know. So there are
right.
issues. The worksheets have been helpful. I have the same goal. I want Jacob well. Have to get rid of the goal. Root myself back in God. What would God do? God said over and over, I've got him. I've got him. Just love him. I've got him. I don't even know what that means, Jeannie, but it was a relief when I got that enlightened goal every single time, practically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, and that's something that I was talking with a lady that I was working with the other day. A lot of it is faith and trust in the Creator and in Rukka that
mm-hmm.
we don't have to handle every situation and figure it out
right.
and fix it. You know,
right.
and if we just get out of the way, you know, then Creator can take care of it. And it may be that he takes care of it in a different way than what we would like to see. You know,
maybe
it's challenging, yeah.
Well, Jeannie, I keep thinking about what you said. You were so young when you went through what you went through, and it was so protracted, and it was so, you didn't have any tools. I mean, it's amazing you're up on your pins and functioning. Congratulations.
thank you. It actually took me, you know, there was probably at least 40 years went by before I could actually say that if I passed him on the street, I wouldn't want to kill him. And, you know, so it just you have to unpeel it little at a time. And that proved, too, that ignoring it or pushing it down or pretending like it didn't happen, it's going to come
out somewhere,
somehow. Right.
Yeah.
So it has to come out somewhere, you know. You might be able to push it down and ignore it, but, you know, eventually you got to face it. I think you've done a fabulous mm-hmm. job with Jacob. And, you know, now I think it's your time to breathe. And
it's such a like night and day. Tim and I
yeah.
gave each other fist bumps and said, we got through that. But your tools have, what you've taught me in the last however many years, time goes so fast, it's probably more years than I would say four, but I bet it's more like six or something, to get us ready to do this. And without any guarantees about Jacob, but to understand the power person thing and Tim Hayes, that text, just put it all in perspective. And it's easy to practice forgiveness on Jake because it really isn't Jake. Jake isn't even there who's talking to me. But it does get ugly, and I have to stop the text. I mean, he was just on a rampage before he got on the plane, and now he can't text for a while, and I get a little relief. But I do read them, and I respond with a distraction or like, how was the Uber ride? You know, something completely other. Told him about the plan of driving all of his stuff, which saves him a day of labor and a lot of trouble. It's really it's good for us too. He said, you mean to say you don't want to live with me anymore? And I said, you've talked about how you'd like a headquarters of your own. Well, if this is it, grab it. We're still here. But I'm going to bring all your stuff and you can set up your life. And he's saying, I suppose so, but I think it's because you don't want to live with me. And what I'd like to say is, are you kidding? Of course we don't. But, you know, I just say, we're here, you know. Temptation
yeah.
to get out of
a thought.
Very, what, Michael?
A thought. You know, it might help Jake as you're already doing for yourself, distinguishing him from his behavior, to help him to distinguish himself from his behavior. Jake, we love living with you, but we don't love living with the hate, the rage, the guilt, the manipulation, and the drugs and alcohol. That's right. We don't like living with that, and we don't want to live with that. In fact, we're going to refuse to live with that ever again. But we would love to live with you. And, you know, pointing out once again, reinforcing who he is, because he's so identified with his behavior. He just, you know, and again, that's why the forgiveness process, when they said to Yeshua, you know, how many times? 77 times 70. Each time you shave off a little bit more of that intense, crazy energy that tends to grab us by the face and run our behavior and weakening that. And, of course, part of it is strengthening the awareness of who you are. So it might be helpful to help him to start to distinguish between the two. He's not his behavior.
No, he isn't. Michael, that is perfect. You know, he stopped regaling me with hateful texts because he had to get on the plane. And that's the very thing that I haven't responded to, is you don't want us to live there. You're getting rid of me and all this stuff. And I didn't answer because I hadn't gotten the inspiration that you just... That's so perfect. I'm going to say what you said. That's perfect. Instead of saying,
and
no, we don't want to live with not when you're like this, you know.
Yeah, the young, well, no, not when you're like this, because that once again equates him with that behavior.
That's what I'm saying I would have said. I'm going to say what you suggested.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay, got it, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So helping him to distinguish. And son, you are welcome back here anytime and forever. However, it's got to be you, not that behavior. And
yeah. Well,
and that there's going to have to be some verification that that behavior has disappeared before we'd even consider it, because, you know, we did it and, you know, you puked all over us, and that just doesn't work. Doesn't work for you. Doesn't work for us. I don't want to support that. You don't need that. And remember, you're getting the original of it every time you do it. It's like your work to do, not mine.
Right. I read it to Jeannie, but I want to read what Tim Hayes said to me. Imagine the stress for Jake experienced as abuse that he was exposed to, which would be needed to take him from an innocent infant to the raging adult you see today. So I just, it's like being sort of
generations.
Like a little cool one. Yep. It's just these little nuggets are just giving me, it's like walking on stepping stones through a swamp. You just threw me another rock and I can put my foot on that one. So thanks.
And to, you know, to recognize the difference here between compassion and functioning as love, that it's appropriate and you can have compassion for that, but you don't have to become the whipping post for it. You can have compassion from where he comes from, identify him. You know, Yeshua was so right on 2,000 years ago, and he said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. That self that comes from that power person dynamic, probably gone on forever in his bloodline.
Yep.
Has got to be undone.
So, Michael, you said compassion versus functioning as love. What were the words you used?
Right. Yeah. Recognizing that. You know, in our culture, we generally tend to define love as, I'm going to do everything you want me to do to make you happy. See, I fulfill all your goals, then you're happy, and that means I'm being loving. That's not loving at all. That can be one of the most disastrous things you could possibly do, as in this situation, had you stepped in and fulfilled every wish he had to be nothing but enabling and driving him into the ground. And so doing everything somebody wants to, quote-unquote, make them happy, and remember that happiness is just a dopamine hit from a fulfilling of a goal, it's like that's a terrible thing to do to people when there's hostility and fear.
So
having a space of compassion, being able to understand where he's coming from, the load he's carrying. I mean, look at anybody in the world. Look at some of these political leaders right now in America that are just so bizarre and insane. I wouldn't want to live in their bodies. The pain in those bodies would be so horrendous. That's the only way somebody can do those kinds of behaviors. So I can have compassion for them, but in the same way, and, you know, I go back to some of the training that I did, 40 or so years ago with Judge Asa Kelly in the Superior Court in Albany, Georgia, when we had the Judicial Service Agency there. And, Judge Kelly, I mean, he put thousands of people in prison, thousands of people, but he never punished one of them. He had great compassion for them. He functioned from the bench, the closest to a saint I've ever seen. I mean, people who committed heinous, heinous crimes. And he'd say, I love you like a brother, but I'm going to put you behind bars for the rest of your life because my community said, they took up a collection to build a building with bars and people weren't safe in the community. They asked me to determine who is and who isn't, and you're not. So with compassion and holding a space of love, I'm going to send you to prison for life. You're going to be removed from the culture for our safety and for your own. Now, should you choose to clean up your life, if you're in agreement, I'll sentence you to laws of living, and you'll recover your life.
It's so
and,
cool.
So people, out of compassion for the safety of the community, for the health of the community, and the individual themselves, people in those situations belong in an institution such as you've just put this young man for his own good and yours, and or in a prison to be isolated from the culture because there's so much potential for damage. But that doesn't belie the fact that there's great compassion for, oh, my God, how much pain does somebody carry to get into that posture? It's just horrendous.
Yeah. Right. And I think
so
what
breathing
he's doing
with you
is escalating and escalating until we become his father and we scream at him. And my son evidently did that. My son was so good. When he was coming to the house, I said, above all, Jonathan has a hothead. I said, do not yell at him. Be gentle. Remember to love him throughout. And it was great. And I got a recording of it, Michael, the whole discussion. Mm. It's a fantastic illustration of how paranoid, I don't like the labels, but he's paranoid and vindictive, bipolar, narcissistic. I mean, everything. He's just sick right now with the substances and everything. But afterwards, he sent my son some hideous texts and also kept repeatedly trying to call him while he was in surgery in the hospital and then saying, why aren't you picking up? You're a privileged rich guy, and you've had a life of leisure all your life, boy, if anybody, I mean, he doesn't know. He triggered
no
my
idea.
Son, and evidently my son really blasted him out of the water with some language and stuff, and I thought, oh, no, there he did. He got it. He finally got the blast from his dad. Yeah.
Yep. Well, and
sorry
about that. In a strange way, in a child's mind, when the parent in abuse mode says, I'm only doing this because I love you, becomes mm-hmm. defined in the child's mind as love. And until the child gets that, there's no love in its life.
Right.
You know, this is the insanity of our culture's definition of love and the loss of awareness. And it's interesting how many people I have this conversation with about using love as a verb and a noun, and how attached people are to, no, it's a verb, it's what I do, I love them, I love my child, I love my parents. It's like the comprehending the error of that is so huge, and recognizing that the mind is a goal-oriented device, and you've got to give mind accurate instructions for the goal you're trying to achieve in order for it to achieve the goal. And if we tell the mind, well, I want to love my neighbor, then I've given my mind an instruction it can never achieve. When I give my mind the instruction, I want to recognize my true being and function as love in the presence of my neighbor, I've given my mind an instruction it can support me in achieving, and it changes everything.
Mm.
But that word is used so carelessly. It's been, like the word forgiveness, it's been degraded and used so carelessly that it's hard for people to detach from it. I mean, I've seen people after 20, 30 years of doing this work, and they come into an intensive and they're under stress, and they talk about, oh, yeah, well, I forgave them. It's like, well, you know that forgiveness isn't letting somebody off the hook, but that underlying brainwash is so deep. It's a monumental piece of work.
You would laugh to hear what I say to my favorite cat, who is a fat orange cat, a curmudgeon. I'll get hold of him and mush him, and I say, Michael Rice says that we never loved anybody, but I beg to differ. I love you. But I say it with full knowledge.
I'll applaud the day when the cat says, come on now, you know better than that.
I know.
Well, I'm so delighted to have this conversation with you, and that you can smile and laugh in the middle of the crisis in this young man, this young man's life, and not allow it to control your life. That's such a monumental shift forward in your work. Just monumental.
I think so. Thanks, Michael. Well, you know, it was amazing. I wanted to sleep at my son's and did last night because I just, and I blocked Jacob's number for the night because he harasses. And I didn't sleep well anyway. It's as if I took Jacob with me and it was a hard night. But, and I was remarking to myself how affected I am just in my gut with what we're going through. But as soon as he left, it's like all the demons or whatever they were left with him, and I just could breathe again. And I know that means I have a lot of work to do.
Well, next layer, next level. You're in the ancestry, so. You know, that tongue-in-cheek line you've heard me use so often, that the purpose of children is to kick us right square in the limitation, and they are our unconscious minds hanging out in true living color and Dolby sound. And here they are, and he's given you so many gifts and so many opportunities, and I certainly acknowledge you for the gifts you've offered him. And, you know, while it may seem like the gifts have been a waste, they've been received. When he'll act on them, I don't know, but they've been received.
Oh, good.
You know, very much like Luke, those moments when Luke, even though he's actively drinking and perhaps drugging, I don't know, but and he raises his head up for a moment and says, yeah, and I remember those worksheets we did, Orb, thank you. You know, I mean, it's there.
Well, you know.
And go ahead.
I didn't even tell you, but Jacob, I mean, maybe I did tell you, Lukey, girlfriend drove home to my daughter's place, and Lukey proceeded to have one of his drunken rages. His girlfriend drove off in her car. He doesn't have a car. He has totaled two cars. Left him there. He went to bed in a fit of terror because she left him. The end of the relationship. In the morning, he said, I'm ready to go into treatment, and it's not because I believe in it. It's not because I'm drinking. It's because I want my girlfriend back. And my daughter said, whatever it takes, Jake, let's set something up. And she drove him 3 hours to Georgia to a program. And as soon as Jacob learned that his brother was in a rehab thing, that's when Jacob started acting out all over the place. They're like connected something.
Well, it's connected. And remember, how do you create stress? Goals. He's got goals for his brother. And his brother acting out the way he has and doing what he has resonated all of those goals. If he doesn't know how to remove those goals from his mind, then his stress is going to skyrocket. And, you know, when stress skyrockets, we default right back to the power person dynamic. You know, it's just, that's what happens.
Well, it's like living technical.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, I hold the space that we get to a point where every child, even at the age of two or three, has someone in their lives that is aware enough to start to tell them that, you know, gee, I see you're upset and it's because you want something. What if you canceled your need for that and taught them the meaning of the word cancel and give them that piece of information? And
great. Yeah.
What a change there'll be in the world. Don't have to go do, you know, hours and months of hot yoga or just that. And the game's going to change.
Yep.
How's Tim doing in this whole series of events?
He's tired. He kept falling asleep sitting in a chair yesterday whenever things got quiet. He's tired, but I left him in charge of Jacob last night because I knew he could handle it. And Jacob hasn't got the hatred for Tim that he has for me. And I said, I'd like to just escape for the night if you don't mind. And Tim said, I'd rather have stayed here. And I said, too bad, I'm not staying here. So up the hill I went. And Tim did fine. He went to bed and slept through the night. And Jacob didn't make a peep. But he's handling it. He's very relieved that Jacob's out of there. And we do have a plan. And that is Jacob comes back and he goes to college. And Tim has agreed to pay for it if he stays well. And I can't use the word sober because Jacob insists that one or two drinks is just what college kids do. So we made the best deal we could that he get well, Tim pay for his apartment and college. And if that doesn't work out, we are no longer giving him money for anything, and he's on his own. So he's very highly motivated, and he's smart. He'll probably do it. I hope he does it.
Yeah.
So
two
that's
thoughts.
The plan. Yeah.
Yeah. Two thoughts there for you. One, Jacob has no hatred for you. Jacob has
Say
hatred.
Again?
I say Jacob has no hatred for you.
Oh, nice.
Jacob has hatred. And you being the female, you know, from what you've told me of his history, there's a lot of rage at mom because mom never protected him from dad or did anything about it. And so you're the symbol, you're the step in for mom. And so that unresolved rage, and it might go to hatred around mom, is still just the content of his mind that he's playing out, and it's not yours.
Yeah.
So I'd invite you to disown all of that.
Oh, I do. It's hard to take, but I do. I don't. He has been so loving, and he's liked being here. And he says, even in his rages, he said, I expect to come back here for vacations, and I want to live in that. That's my space. And I say to him, why would you want to do that with such monstrous people taking care of you? He says, well, it's my space. And so anyway, we have these, you know. Oh, geez.
The second thing I would offer is.
Oh, yeah.
When you talk about, well, you know, that's what kids do. They have a couple of drinks.
No.
My offering is this. Well, you said your deal with him, you know, he's going to, you can't say stay sober because kids have drinks and that's the way it is.
That's what
my offering would be. Right. But it sounds like you made the deal with him that, okay, a couple of drinks is fine.
Yeah.
And we'll support you. But he can't drink.
Yeah.
He can't drink and stay sober. He can't do it. He can't have one drink and stay sober.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so well established in AA circles. I mean, for decades, that's one of the first pieces of information that the alcoholic or drug addict gets. You've got to abstain, period. And there's no, you know, it's like the slippery slope. So it might be as he goes through his rehab program, and they'll reinforce that. In fact, you may talk to some counselors there, and maybe even the counselors would come up with supporting him contacting you and changing that deal so that it's absence and that's it. Because he can't drink. He just, it's not, you know, that's just an invitation to go down and off the rails.
Oh, I do know that. He, at this point, I'm just hoping they will get through to him about that because he just thinks I'm going to manipulate him and stuff. So,
well, he's been in this program before, right?
Yeah, he was in it, and he told me it wasn't much and it wasn't very good and blah, blah. Now he's saying, those people and I got along. I made some friends there. I feel safe there. I want to go back there. And so I grabbed it. You know, but he changes his tune.
Sure, sure. Well, and that's, you know, pretty consistent with someone who's been through several different forms of abuse in childhood. That's pretty typical that one persona doesn't know what the other one's doing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks for listening to his music. I mean, I didn't tell him because he's so down on everything. I should have said a good friend of mine listened because he knows that I'm when I talk about Michael Rice, he says, I'm not doing that stuff. So, we got a ways to go. So if I said Michael Rice listened, and he would throw it away. And it's a beautiful thing that you listened and you liked it. He does have talent.
Well, you know, I went to the webpage, and he talks about how some of his music that he – I forget the details. I think he said he was in grade 10 or grade 12, and he had his own recording studio set up in his bedroom, and he recorded this music in his bedroom in high school. And it is awesome. I don't know if you've listened, if you've gotten on Spotify.
I have.
But
I have. He plays stuff for me. Yeah.
I mean, he's good.
He is good.
Unfortunately, the music industry is where drugs and alcohol live.
Oh, no kidding. And he said, I wrote those when I was high on LSD. That's what he says. And he says, I can't do that without LSD. And I say, Jacob, it's in there. You don't need the LSD. It's like Dumbo the elephant. Do you know that story about the baby elephant with the big ears? Anyway, it's a great story. I won't tell it to you now. Basically, he's falling from a very great height, and a mouse who's sitting in his hat says, Dumbo, you can fly. Spread your wings. You can fly. It's a great story, and I'm not doing it justice.
Yes.
But anyway.
I got it. Well, holding the space for him, and, you know, maybe the occasion will present itself to communicate with counselors and let them know about what you've agreed to around him going back to school and alcohol, and that maybe they can inspire him to come back to you and change the deal so he suggests there's no alcohol.
Whoa. How could we get that to happen?
Talk to his counselors. Let them know the history. Let them know the agreement that you made, that you agreed to send him back to school, and that, you know, perhaps you realize that's not the best option. And so you'd like to enlist their support in getting him to, you know, that they can tailor their conversations with him to getting him to understand how dangerous it is to his sobriety to just have a drink or two whenever, you know, boys are getting together. Because when the boys get together, the boys have a drink, and then they have another drink, and then they have another drink, and then they have another, and another, and another, and another. And it's not a drink or two. And it's hard enough for the alcoholic to resist it, especially when stress starts to build anyway. And going to school, there's a lot of stressors.
Yep.
So they can perhaps tailor his program to some degree to his going back to school, knowing he's going into an environment. I mean, in the AA program, they say, you just never go into a bar again. Well, you know, going back to college is like going into a bar, you know, pretty much the way alcohol is thrown around on college campuses today.
Yes, it's true. It's terrible. So anyway.
And it's miraculous that both of those young men are still alive and rocking and have a chance to move forward. And I certainly, Luke is in a program now in Georgia.
He is, and we've heard from his nurse that he hates it. He wants to get out, but he's doing it to get his girlfriend back. So he's not at the root level, but he's doing it. And the girlfriend will take him back if he's sober. Or she drinks too, so it may not be enough. She may let him have one drink or two, and then it'll escalate, and they may have to go through this again.
Yeah. And maybe somebody can get to her and explain to her the parameters of, or the history of how that works, you know, what the outcome is of that, and is she interested enough in him and care enough about him to give up alcohol with him? Because not giving up alcohol when he does is, again, it's the slippery slope. It's just
of course.
Tough.
Yeah. Well, we when Lukey was drinking, he told them what awful people we are. It's very much like Jacob. We are the hateful ones. We are the abusers. So she doesn't have much use for us. I have no contact with her. But maybe at this point, she might listen. I could see,
Can't hurt to have a conversation.
Yeah. Okay, I'm taking notes.
And you can bet that in his alcoholic stupor, he's turned the rage on her too. So she knows how that story goes.
Oh, he has.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So she knows how
she
the story goes. Of, yeah. Yeah.
It keeps happening over and over. I think she really loved him, but no, nobody ever loved anybody. Scratch that, Michael.
Sounds
she
like
really
you're deeply in resonance. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
all
everybody
right.
needs
this
that for sure. All right, young lady, we're holding the space for both of them and for you. Nice work.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You know,
thanks
there's
for
a,
the support.
There's a wonderful line in the Course in Miracles that I think really applies here, and that is that millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you've done. But you,
I sure hope so, because this can't
yeah.
keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, it's,
survive.
I mean... You know,
I mean, you started talking about the politicians and climate change. And so, you know, if we survive, yes. Critical mass, hurry up.
Well, you know, something that I think needs to change, there's a holiday post, I'm sure you've heard me talk about it before, that I put up usually around Christmas each year about the alien that comes to Earth and is kind of surprised by meeting this family and finding out that they have this special cabinet in their home that that is only used for good friends and family on special occasions to have a good time. And then the alien describes the stupor that people go into as they serve alcohol to these cherished
right.
friends and family, and how, you know, and then looking at the over 3 million people a year that die from alcohol and the X number, XXXX, just going down the list. And it's like, when you look at it from that perspective, it's just so bizarre. You know, what do most people in this society do when somebody really special comes to visit them? They go over to the alcohol cabinet. I mean, how bizarre is that?
Totally. Yep.
That's what it is for today. Anyway, you are appreciated. Your efforts
Thank
and your
you,
work
Mike.
With these young men. Yeah. All right. Blessings. We cherish you.
Thank you, Michael. You too.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Miss Jeannie, any other thoughts for you before we let this young lady get off the line?
Actually, I muted her, but I'll turn her back on. But no, she and I chatted for several minutes before you got on. So.
And I have this awesome, huge pot of tomato sauce brewing. I did some extra special things to it. So the garden is in the pot now, marinating as we speak. So my history, for those who may not know it, is in the food business. And one of the things that I came across recently, I shared with some of you that I went to Boston and worked with this scientist that's doing a formulation of probiotics. And, you know, well over the years, I've suggested to people, oh, you've got an infection, take garlic. I'd never thought of, you know, it's like, duh. It had never connected in my brain that microbiome, antibiotic. I mean, I'm anti-antibiotic, but if you've got an infection, then, you know, boost the garlic and it'll tend to knock out your infection. But I'd never really thought about the impact of it on the microbiome. So, you know, when I cook, the first thing I do is reach for the onions, and you know, it's like that's the starting point. And so onions and garlic being antibiotics, decided to drop totally. And so had to come up with a whole new recipe, did a whole new study of creating a tomato sauce without onions and garlic, and that's quite an opportunity. So we've got lemon balm and Thai basil and parsley and Swiss chard and just all kinds of stuff for our new formulation. So When it's ready, we'll send each of you a taste via the psychic megaphone. So do we have anybody else out there with a hand up in the phone queue, sweetie, or anything happen in the chat room? We've got about 5 minutes left. 3 minutes, I guess.
Nope. It is
very
all
quick
quiet.
Question could happen.
Oop, a hand
it's
just
all
went
quiet.
Up, and I believe it's Smith.
Okay,
it's let's... Susan again.
Okay, Michael, here. I must have missed something. What's the matter with garlic and onions?
Oh, I didn't say there's anything the matter with it. I have just, since I you remember a couple of weeks ago, I made this trip to Boston working with a scientist and bringing his probiotic formulation into a healthcare plan. So we went up and we experienced the work that he does. Very profound, very powerful. Just this, I mean, mentally, emotionally, I can still feel the effects in my physiology from 3 1-quarter teaspoons of these probiotics that we did over a period of about 4 hours in our session. And one of the things he brought up, is onions and garlic. Now, there are other things that are considered to be antibiotic as well, and I'm going to do some more research on that, but at this point I've decided to not use garlic and onions anymore because of the antibiotic effect on the microbiome. And if you want to, you know, he's come up with a formulation where he says there are 16 different probiotics you have to have in your body for health, and that's what his formulation is made of. And if you want to maintain it, you can't use antibiotics every day.
Not even in the onions, not even the natural ones.
Well, they're antibiotics.
I had no idea. I love onions. I love garlic.
Oh, so do I. I mean, you know, the first thing I do, if it doesn't matter what I'm going to cook, I get out the pot and I chop up 2 onions and get them started sauteing and a big, you know, couple of big spoons of garlic. That's my standard starting point for everything. And so when I was like, okay, now I'm going to make, we got our fresh tomatoes, I'm going to make tomato sauce. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So I had to hit the books and actually hit the internet and went to a half a dozen different sites and got some ideas on how to get the flavor, as full of flavor for our tomato sauce as you get with garlic and onions without the garlic and onions. So, And we got the first batch yesterday afternoon, and it's awesome.
Wonderful.
It's as good as anything we ever made with garlic and onions. So.
How fantastic.
It's been fun. Yeah, it's been fun. Another new learning experience.
Yeah.
So much appreciation to everyone who joins us every day that you do join us. We hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life and pass it on. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.